I'll go way back. My father came from Wisconsin, was Phi Beta Kappa, multi high level. And he would have been very old now. He was born in 1892. He was drafted into the Army when he was a junior Phi Beta Kappa. He refused to put on a uniform, and they expelled him. They expelled him from the school. He came to New York. He was a famous columnist in his day. Married my mother's second wife, but married my mother, had their son here. And then World War II came along. And as much as my father was anti-war, he couldn't face Hitler. He couldn't justify Hitler. And so, I'll be honest with you, he drank himself to death. I was 11 years old. I have been living with my grandparents in Queens. My brother was sent to Elizabeth Irwin High School. I was too young to go in the subways and things. And so, during the war, it was very hard to find somebody who would take care of me. Actually, they did hire somebody, and I was in a bad mood. I guess I was 3 years old. And she said to me, "If you don't behave yourself, I'll suck you up in the vacuum cleaner." When my mother heard that, my mother was a school teacher, and my father was working at night as a telegraph operator. They had to have somebody take care of me. But when she heard that, she fired the woman and she sent me to live with my grandparents in Queens. I lived with them as long until I was 9 years old, when I could navigate the buses. I came to live with them on 15th Street. My father was still alive. I went on 15th Street right up to Friends Seminary. You know,
2nd Avenue?
Between 2nd and 3rd Avenue, overlooking the park. And I came to Little Red Schoolhouse because my brother had graduated from the high school. He was the second graduating class, 1946. And my mother, who was a public school teacher, said she couldn't send me to a public school. She had to send me to a school that supported the values they believed in. And that was Little Red Schoolhouse.
What were those values?
Those values were anti-war. Those values were equality. Those values were very much the same as they are today. That's the beauty of the school. And this is what Elizabeth Irwin stood for. That's what she put into operation. That's why my brother was sent there. And that's when my brother went on to be a big-time writer about politics. That's what happened to him. He went to Wisconsin. He was on the Washington Post. And he worked for many, many years on the editorial board of the New York Times. He was named after his middle name was after my father, Carl. His name was Carl with K. E, after my father, Ernest Meyer. So Carl E. Meyer graduated from Elizabeth Irwin in 1946.
I'll see if I can find him.
Oh, you should find him somewhere. I forced him to come to his 70th reunion. He was honored many, many years ago. He was honored by Elizabeth Irwin. So I couldn't get him to be honored, but I could get him to come to the reunion. I mean, it was good for him. And he introduced the alum of the year, who was, I guess, maybe 1968 or 78, something like that. And I proudly got him to be the one to introduce him. So it made me feel.
Bringing him back.
I was honored, I think, in 1987. so I couldn't, I'm finished with being on it. But I went to the school, and it was so different from public school. I mean, I could wear blue jeans. My mother didn't approve of this thing with the fly up the front. She said, boys wear fly up the front. I said, Ma, there's a new day, you know. I could call my teachers by their first name. Never. I'd done that in public school. And I was a tomboy, you know. I played with the boys. I was always chosen for second base over the playground here. I could really, really play well. I outgrew being a tomboy in high school because girls weren't popular if they were tomboys, so I became a girl. But I always tell this story. Adria was a star in the basketball team. I was 2 years behind her. I became not only a star, but the captain of the team, and I broke all the school records. What you don't know is that girls' basketball, when I was going to school, was half court. Girls couldn't run full court. They're too fragile. So forwards took half of the court, and guards took the other half. And we only had two dribbles, because you can't dribble across the court. You're too frail. You're a girl, after all. So I learned, and Adria did the same, I learned to shoot from half court, set shots, get them right in, and I learned to take two big dribbles and go underneath and do a layup. And with that, I had a score one year of 35 points in a game, which broke all the records forever, even Adria's records. So we like to laugh about that. So that was the sports of the school. But basically, and the reason I was sent there is because of political viewpoints. And we were very, very active politically in every way we were permitted to. At the time, it was the end of World War II. Eleanor Roosevelt came to speak to the school. She lived over here on 29 Washington Square.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, so she came up. You know, it's like having Hillary Clinton come now.
Were you there for that assembly?
I was there for that assembly. And that, I was dazzled. I was just dazzled to be there. I was so proud to be a student there. So, at the time, Little Red Schoolhouse only went to the 7th grade. No, I'm sorry. It started, you went to Elizabeth Irwin when you were starting in the 8th grade, right? So what happened in my case is that my father, I'm not doing things quite chronological way. When my father died, I was 11. Lewis Sarlin was my teacher. I was so embarrassed. I was so ashamed because everybody else had a family. And here I was, half an orphan. And I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to be different from anybody else. I mean, this was going into the 50s when we were all conformists. So I wanted to pretend that I had a cold so that I could stay out of school for a week. And then I would go in and say, I had a cold. While I was out of school, I got a letter from the class. Everybody signed the letter saying how sorry they were to hear the news. So no hiding. I couldn't hide. I came back. And that was a real growing process to realize that I could be different. I could be different because I only had one parent now and everybody else had two parents. And still I was accepted. I wasn't quite so accepted for being a tomboy. But
that would come later.
That came later. So what happened is that because I was so unhappy, I'm so lonely, basically. I said to my mother, and this was just before my father died, because he was no company, and I wasn't like particularly at school. So I said to my mother, I really would like to have a doll. And my mother said, oh my God, we have enough problems, enough responsibilities. We can't take a doll.
Yeah, that one was sold out.
So a friend of my mother's, a very old friend, said, Dorothy, Susan needs a doll. I don't want any talk back from you. I am breeding my dog, and she's getting the first pick of the left litter. I don't care what you say. 10 years old, May 5th, 1950, I was 10 years old. I walked. She lived in the West Village, and there was this litter of English Cocker Spaniels, and I had the pick. So I picked up the litter. He was jet black with a little apron on his neck. I picked him up in my hands. He was so small, and I said, this is my pick. And she said, when he's 6 weeks old, he's yours. I came and got him, and he was 6 weeks old. And he was my life. I was so lonely. He was my full life. So I taught him to do everything. Sit, jump, beg, held up a hand and jump here. Put costumes on him. He walked around. I have pictures of all of that, of his being dressed up and showing, wearing sunglasses. And you know what he did? He made me popular in school. I would bring him to school, and we performed, and that made me
pop. What do you mean you performed?
We performed with his tricks. I go like this, he jumped in my arms.
What was his name?
His name was Nicky.
Nick.
Don't ask me why I named him Nicky. You know, I'd lift my arm, jump. I'd say, you want some food? Bang. He'd bang. So I had a whole performance that I did with the kids. So this made me popular, and I owed the dog that. While I was walking the dog in the park, it may be more than you want to hear, but while I was walking the dog in Stuyvesant Park, this wonderful dog of mine, I let him run all around the park, he'd go everywhere he wanted. A man came in with a wire-haired terrier on a leash. This wire-haired terrier was wild. You know, everything, he's... So my dog walked up to this terrier, sniffed him, and said, if I said, calm down, I'm your friend. Wire-haired terrier, calm down. And the owner of the dog looked at me and said, your dog must be a pacifist. And I said, my dog's a pacifist. Grazie. Oh, grazie. Thank you so much. This is not kosher, I know.
Yes, please. Thank you. That's perfect.
Sure?
Yes.
There's a spot here.
Oh, yes, thank you.
And here too.
Thank you. I know this is not kosher. But you would forgive me.
I don't object.
Okay. So, I'm walking the dog on the park, and this man said, your dog must be a pacifist. And I said, my dog is, and so is my father. Because he was a pacifist in World War I. And this man took an immediate interest in me. I spotted immediately that he wasn't dangerous. And he said, let's walk in the park together. So
So we would meet after school. I would walk in the park with him and Arno, and I'd with him and his dog. My mother was so taken by the way I talked about this man, Sidney Alexander, that she said, invite him for dinner. So he came with his wife to our house next door, because he was on 230 East 15th Street, and we were at 222. He came upstairs with the dog and his wife, and we had dinner in the kitchen, and my father was there. And it was such a lively evening, I was almost jealous, because my parents obviously took to them immediately.
And he was yours.
And he was mine. Well, as it happened, my father died 3 weeks later. Died very suddenly, cirrhosis of the liver, and out, he was gone. So my mother did what she didn't have to do. She approached Sidney and she said, would you fill in? And I said, when I heard that, I said, Mom, you don't have to tell him that. He already was filling in. Sidney took me under his arm, and so did Francis. I mean, everything I did was at him. Unlike my father, who didn't like the dog, who was depressed, who said I was making too much noise with my friends, you know. He was a depressed man. Sidney, everything I did was perfect. Was I going to be an artist? Was I going to be a musician? Was I going to be a dog trainer? Everything I did was perfect. So I came to life with, between the dog and Sidney, I suddenly developed such self-esteem. And what happened is that he got a job. He was a writer. He got a job at the UN, and he wrote me a letter, and he called my mother, and he said, would your daughter be willing to walk my dog after school? He wanted to be sure it was kosher.
Yes.
And my mother agreed, and he said, I'll pay you $1.50 a week. And I said, you don't have to pay me anything at all. I love the idea. Every day after school, I'd run up to his house next door. There was his dog, and there was his pictures, and it was like being in another world. And I took the dog out, and he wrote, always left a note for me on the finial of a lamp right near his easy chair. And it was always a note. And it would say things like, dear Susie, my schmoozy, and he'd make little pictures, like children's stories. So I started calling him, dear Sidney, my kidney. For the rest of my life, I called him Kid. Rest of my life, until he died, I called him Kid. Well, needless to say, we were inseparable, and the heartbreak of it is that his way of life was to earn enough money. His wife was a dental hygienist, and so whenever they'd earn enough money, they would go to Florence, Italy, where he was writing a trilogy on Michelangelo, a historical novel trilogy. 30 years of Michelangelo's life in every volume. The whole thing came to 900 pages. It was wild. But then he would disappear. He'd disappear. And I thought, oh my God, I'm abandoned. Well, okay. By now I'm in the eighth grade. It's clear that I'm the artist of the class. Sidney told me. Everybody else told me. And it was also clear I couldn't go on to the high school because my mother couldn't afford it on one salary, on a teacher's salary. But it was okay because I would go to music and art. So I took the test, and it was clear I was going to get in. Took the test. April comes around. Six of us in the class applied, some for music, some for art. Four got in, and I was rejected. needless to say, I went into a depression. My mother went into a depression. And what got us out of it is that I got a letter from Sydney and Francis saying, I urge you, come this summer to Florence. And my mother said, okay, my brother will take care of the dog. We'll rent a house in the country, and we're going to go to Florence. 1954, not long after the war, 14 days on a ship to get there. I spent the entire summer in Florence, and that's why I still know Italian. I picked it up right away. But the beauty of the story, and this is gets you back to Little Red School before, is that I would say about 3 weeks before we were to leave, my mother got a letter from Elizabeth Irwin. She's long since gone. From the scholarship committee, had held an emergency scholarship meeting on my behalf, and they came through awarding me a full scholarship for 4 years. You know why I support that school now? That school means everything to me. They rescued me. Otherwise, I would have had to go to Washington High School on Irving Heights, a bunch of bull dykes sitting around cursing. Oh, just sitting on the steps smoking. That's why we were sent to class, thinking I'd have to go there. I would say the school saved me. The school rescued me, and I am forever indebted, and I'm a major donor. I'm not rich, but I'm in the leadership donorship donor committee. I owe them everything. And maybe I should started chronologically so that you could have gotten the story as spelled out, but you can understand why I'm a very active alum. I have been right from the beginning, still organizing our reunion.
I love that. I was so excited when you told me that.
Yeah, it's a little depressing because people in my age, a lot of people my age are not so excited, but they're not well, many have died. Some of them just don't answer the letters. And I've learned now that I can't pursue them, I can't force them. I do the best I can. I'm going to send them the notification I just got about Alumni Day. We're going to be celebrating Robert De Cormier.
I'm coming on June 3rd.
Well, it's the whole weekend.
Oh, yeah.
You go there.
Yes, I will.
Okay. And the people who are being honored this year, of course, are much younger than I am. I was honored a long time ago. But I'm so impressed by the people who are being honored. I'm on the alumni council, and we help pick the alums of being honored. And one of the things I did when I graduated high school, and I put it in, when I organized my, 10 years ago I organized my reunion, I got a much better show. I reproduced a lot of photographs, but I also reproduced the pages from the yearbook I did our senior year, because I continue to be the artist in the class. Bossing. You've been charmed by this. Milton Termin was the senior class teacher. Did all the formal photographs. So he did that every year. He photographed formal photographs of us graduating. He did it in the 8th grade. And he did it in 12th grade. Everyone has their graduation photographs as I do. And inside we have headshots of each of us with a little expression and all of that.
Yes. I'm putting excerpts of those expressions into my book.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, you'll love this one.
What?
No, it's not an expression. Because I was still the artist in the class, I designed a so-called yearbook. It was 16 pages paper that And I put our photographs and the expressions, people in it, the graduation photograph. And on a double page spread, I did cartoons, and I called it A Glimpse into the Future.
I read that.
You did?
I read that, yeah.
I did it.
It's hilarious.
And with the pictures, carrying a bedpan, playing cellos. You saw it?
Yes, I read through that yearbook because it's so hilarious. And also...
And you know, some of those people actually did do end up doing what I predicted.
There was one girl in this class.
Mm-hmm.
Not for some reason, I think it's Janet, but I could be wrong.
No, but she's gorgeous.
And you said that
you'd be a model,
yeah, or like a fashion, and you had like a little cartoon.
Was it Judy Coleman? I forgot. I'd have to look.
Judy, it might be like something similar to it. But I loved that. I loved that.
So I did everybody, and I put myself in the corner fast asleep. With the big zzzz.
Yep.
And all in the shoe.
I can't believe you did that. It's like...
I did that. So for my reunion 10 years ago, I reproduced it to see how many people actually turned out doing what I predicted.
And to...
Some.
Some. Some. And that's how... Yeah.
Well, I have a hard time accepting, and I get a lot of hell for this, is why... My good friends from high school, my class, we laughed together. And in fact, two of them went on to Wisconsin. We were freshmen together in Wisconsin and continued our laughing. One has disappeared altogether. I don't know where she is, Mary Ellen Marsh, to my closest friend. And the other was Nancy Friend, who lives here. She used to live at 29 Washington Square. She lives midtown Manhattan. Won't come to anything, doesn't answer my letters. I don't know why. And it breaks my heart. I want to know. Yes, you don't have to come. Just tell me what's happened. Are you bitter? Do you have bad memories of this school? Why do you ignore it? I want to know. Like Barney Boston was our gym teacher. His daughter, Freda, was in our class. She doesn't answer any letters.
That's why they can't predict it.
Letters bounce.
If they're just so inaccurate.
I think.
How are we doing here?
The idea of having this time be forgotten, like my 4 years at Little Red, is terrifying.
It's terrifying for you, isn't it?
And that's another reason why I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm. Did you just start as a freshman at EI from Heschel?
From Heschel.
It's quite a transition.
Yes. Oh my God.
Now, what made you decide to do that?
I applied to a bunch of high schools. I walked into Little Red. I just felt it. I met a girl who was a senior, and she was there with her twin brother. They were both kind of tour guides, and her twin brother loved math and sciences, and she loved arts and humanities, and she said that they both loved their teachers and their classes. And I just thought, you know, if two twins that are polar opposites, like me and my twin, can both find their place here, then
it's never
set.
Were you going to go to college?
I have 2 weeks to decide. I'm between Wellesley and McGill.
McGill is in Canada, right?
McGill is in Canada, which could be very nice to get out of town.
Is Wellesley still all women?
What?
That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't really like either of them.
And why did you, did you not get into what you wanted, where you wanted to go?
Yeah, I didn't get in.
Where did you want to go?
Barnard.
Really? And they turned you down? What a mistake.
Thank you.
That's actually where Sharon Kleinbaum went. I'm surprised at that. I really am.
Yuki actually wrote me a letter of recommendation for Barnard because that's where she went as well. But it's okay. So I'm in a tricky place with the college stuff. You went to Wisconsin?
Well, I qualified for the Ivy League. My mother went to Cornell. She went to Cornell for free because she read to a blind woman, a rich blind woman, and was paid for her tuition. My mother was a terrible student. She flunked practically everything, but she made it through. So getting into Cornell was a no-brainer. And I was on the wait list to Pembroke. And I applied to the University of Wisconsin. And I had one of those epiphanies in the middle of the night. I really want to go to the University of Wisconsin. I never knew my father while he was alive. Why don't I go and learn about him? And my brother went there. And that's where I am in a memoir now. But I discovered when I got out that my father was a hero. And everyone opened their arms to me. It was hard because I was giving up the Ivy League. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, this is really where you're meant to go, even though you qualified. Just because they think you should go doesn't mean you should feel the privilege of being going there. Go where you want to go.
Yeah.
And it was the best decision I could have made. It was fabulous. It changed my life, not only in the perception of my family and how they met, how my mother met my father, my brother was born there, but also what I assumed I was going to major in, you know, where I had all these highfalutin ideas, be an artist, be this, be that. And I ended up falling in love with a professor who completely changed my life and my outlook toward history. His name is George Mossy. I just met somebody. I take Tai Chi. I met somebody in my Tai Chi class whose husband got his PhD at Wisconsin, and on committee was George Mossy. You don't meet that every day. But when I said that George Mossy changed my life, he knew exactly what he was talking about. He was a German intellectual. His parents were very wealthy. They owned a newspaper in Germany. And his newspaper was confiscated. He managed to escape from Germany, though I don't think his parents did. And he came to America. He was very rough on us. He called us spoiled brats and all of that. What do you know? Just what we needed to hear. And sort of shook up our ideas about what is history, really. There are many interpretations of history. And so I ended up majoring in history. And wrote my thesis by combining all these different aspects of my life on the government 1492 in Florence, Italy, and why it couldn't hold on to the democracy that Venice was able to hold on to for three centuries. So I was a historian, but I went right back to Sidney Alexander.
Right back to Pitt.
Isn't
that amazing?
It was amazing. Okay.
so cool. All these things are so...
Well, they all came together. It's just awesome. In the end, I have to say, I feel truly, truly blessed. For all the misfortune I may have had together with my father and being growing up during the war, which is no picnic, I am blessed. And I owe Elizabeth Owen a lot. I do. And I'm proud to say that they are completely current. When I see what the curriculum is, when I see these kids marching in pride parades, and I'm wondering whether they were out there in Washington Square.
Something happened.
What? Somebody died. And I wanted to know about that.
Yeah.
I know the alumni.